From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made with the close of the legislative session in Albany. Lawmakers went to work this year to tackle a wide range of issues. Education, climate action, jobs, marijuana. Really, the city of Rochester school district alone was a question of what could happen in Albany, and that's just for starters. We invited the local delegation to join us to discuss what did and what did not get done. And this morning, Assemblywoman Jamie Romeo was forced to cancel her appearance with us today. Wish her well and hope to talk to her soon, but we welcome two members of the New York State Assembly to the studio this hour to talk about what did and did not get done in Albany. Assemblyman Harry Bronson, nice to have you back here.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
And also with us is Assemblyman Mark Johns. Mark, welcome back here.
Good to be back, Evan.
So a lot that sort of did or didn't get done, I'm going to ask you both to kind of give me maybe the top of the list of what did and maybe either didn't get done or what frustrated you most or what you thought the biggest success was, and then we'll kind of go very specifically. Harry, I'll start with you. What was the biggest success and what frustrated you the most?
Sure. I think that in large general issues, we had great success with the climate change issue that we passed, the renter's protection that we passed, sexual assault and harassment changes that we passed. For me personally, some bills that I got passed in both houses, accessibility to mental health as well as taxpayer protection through when we let out contracts to consultants. Some of the things that I wish we had taken care of is legalization of marijuana, the prevailing wage bill that I carried. We weren't able to get that over the goal, and as well as making reforms for the Rochester City School District. I wish we had done something there.
Okay. Mark Johns, so what's your list look like?
I agree with some of Harry's ideas. I'd say we had another on-time budget. April 1st came through on time, and we had record school aid, and I think that was an accomplishment as well.
Okay. Anything stand out to you that you would have liked to get done?
Well, the same things that we'd like to, most people would like to see done over the last 8 or 9 years. I think we need to usher in real reform. People vote, but they also vote with their feet, and 100,000 people leave upstate and western New York every year. It's not a coincidence that Wegmans is opening up 4 new stores in the Raleigh-Durham-Chapel Hill area this summer. I mean, people from upstate and western New York are leaving, and we need to do something to keep them here.
All right, so let's kind of go issue by issue. And Harry, because I know my colleague James Brown talked to you a couple of weeks ago before the close of the session, I want to start with the work that you'd put together regarding the Rochester City School District. Obviously, it is no secret in this community that there's a debate about whether there should be a state takeover of the school board or some kind of other reforms. Remind our listeners what you proposed specifically in Albany this year.
Sure. I proposed a bill that really would put in statute a lot of the recommendations that the distinguished educator came up with in his report. One measure would be in line with the governance change from a standpoint of reining in the school board, requiring education of the school board on what their duties and responsibilities are from a fiscal standpoint as well as a policy standpoint, expressly stating that the superintendent has certain powers and the school board has other powers, and that the school board is not to interfere with the superintendent's powers. The second would be community schools. As has been pointed out, School 17 is a model, and so what the idea would be is that the superintendent, in consultation with the commissioner of state education, would put together a strategic plan to convert schools to community schools with funding that would come along with that. And then the third aspect was to get more community involvement through an advisory council. It would be the Children's Advisory Council, and it would be made up of professionals in the area of early childhood development, special education, English language learners, trauma-informed mental health services, and really to look at other things that we have to support our children with. So the last two provisions, the community schools and the advisory council, was a way to give voice to parents and voice to students, as well as give support to the new superintendent and the school board in areas, all the areas that the distinguished educator found, and it also statutorily required the 13 strategies that the distinguished educator said needs to be put in place. It required the school board and the superintendent to come up with those strategies. That was my approach, and it was disappointing that I couldn't get other folks to support that, and instead they just wanted to go down the line of having a referendum. My position was we could do this and let the referendum go forward, but by doing this, you know, right now the school board and the superintendent, they're planning for next year. They're planning for the start of the new school year. We're going to lose 2 or 3 months when we really should be forcing the district to make the changes that were recommended.
One of the most ardent supporters of some kind of reform, probably a state takeover, and at the very least this referendum, is the mayor of Rochester, Lovely Warren. I know you've spoken to her privately, or I assume you've spoken to her privately about this. You and her disagree on this. When she tells you, look, we've had a crisis for too long, and this is the best path forward, why has it not convinced you? What are you not convinced about with her argument?
I'm not convinced because we have evidence that state takeovers don't work. They don't work here in New York State. We have examples of where they have not worked.
Where?
Roosevelt School didn't work. It was supposed to be a 5-year takeover that was started in 2002. The state didn't leave until 2017. The increase of performance indicators did not increase any faster in that school than it did in other schools that were similarly situated that did not have takeovers. I think that takeovers are problematic because it does eliminate the voice of the parents and the residents in the school district. But beyond that, across takeovers, the laws were put in place in the beginning of the 80s. They were put in place mostly by Caucasian white governors who were concerned about people of color entering the political realm through school boards and then demanding in urban city school districts that more funding goes to those school districts. There's literature all over that says that these takeovers do not work, and in fact, they actually hurt brown and black children more than they help them. I'm not convinced that a takeover here would be beneficial, but that doesn't mean I'm not extremely frustrated with the school district, and we need to do something. My legislation actually responded directly to the distinguished educator's recommendations, his roadmap to success, and a takeover doesn't guarantee that at all.
All right, so last question on this. I'll ask Mark what he thinks about this from his position as a legislator as well. But when you talked to colleagues, when you had your legislation that addressed these issues without a state takeover, and you've got relationships that go back a long time with your colleagues here from the Rochester area, what did they tell you privately? How come you couldn't get them on board?
Well, it wasn't a matter of getting certain people on board. There were people who were supportive of it. The senators were generally supportive, not on every aspect of it, but they agreed that, you know, doing a referendum would put the vote to the voters, and they felt that, you know, let's just do that. But I think that there are many colleagues who were supportive. Obviously, we only have in the majority those of us who represent the city. There's only 3 of us in the assembly. David Gant obviously was not supportive. He wants to take over. It's really a matter of not just my colleagues, but it's a matter of getting other stakeholders and folks who are interested in helping us turn the school around to get more voices out there to do this. The unfortunate thing was, you know, we waited for the commissioner to come out with a plan. She met with us several weeks before I put out my plan. She, in general ways, and it was in my office in Albany, all the assembly members were there. Senator Funke, Senator Robach were in the office. We had a detailed conversation. She laid out some ideas. None of them was about removing the school board. But she laid out some ideas, and we requested her to get us something in writing and a proposal. That never came. The so-called commissioner plan only came out through a very creative way of releasing email exchanges of a proposal that was being discussed.
Okay. And so is this a dead issue until the referendum now?
Absolutely not. No, it's not a dead issue because we cannot wait to help turn the school around. I'm going to be working with the new superintendent. I've met with him. I've offered my support. I'm going to work with the school board, the existing school board, as well as those who won the primary and will likely make it through in November. And I think that no matter what happens on the referendum, we need to be helping and getting community investment in turning the school district around, starting now instead of waiting until September. The school year starts in September. The superintendent has to put his plan in place. We have to try to be supportive as a community in every way we need to. And so I would ask the business community to do so. I would ask every layer of government to do so, the city, the county, the state level. I would ask the nonprofit sector, the wraparound services that mostly the county provides, higher education institutions like U of R's and others, to be part of putting a plan in place. We don't have to wait for state legislation. We don't have to wait for a referendum. We should be doing that work right now.
And I suspect you want to see no votes on the referendum. I mean, votes of no.
Yeah,
you want to see it defeated.
Yeah, I don't support the referendum because I don't support a replacement by appointments from the commissioner of people that she chooses versus people that voters would choose.
Mark Johns, how do you see this issue?
Well, I don't represent the city.
I'm curious to know how lawmakers in Albany are sort of who don't represent the city are seeing what's happening and kind of responding to this.
Well, from an outsider's point of view, I mean, I defer to Harry and, you know, Senator Funky and Robach on a lot of these issues. They represent the city. But they did have a mayoral control takeover in New York City many years ago, and that was passed by the New York State Senate and Assembly. So I know this is a state takeover, but there was an approval for a mayoral takeover, and it's been reapproved a number of times down there. So, you know, I'm not a big fan of it. I actually voted against it, but I try not to, you know, get involved with city politics. I think that Mayor Lovely Warren and Bob Duffy are on the same side on this issue, and then Rich Funky and Harry are on the other side. So it's a different kind of mix, and, you know, we'll let them work it out.
Okay, let's talk about some other things that did and did not get done. Harry mentioned marijuana. Mark Johns, Assemblyman, how did you feel about legalization of marijuana for recreational purposes, and what do you think of what happened in Albany or didn't happen in Albany this year?
Well, they didn't legalize it, and I think there would be a problem with legalizing something that is illegal at the federal level. I mean, a lot of the issues that I actually agree with should be done at the federal level. Climate change, which I believe in, I think it's a problem. We can't be a workers' paradise and an environmental paradise in New York State while the rest of the world and the rest of the country isn't playing by the same rules.
Okay. On marijuana, Harry Bronson did not see state action on recreational purposes marijuana. What do you make of that?
Yeah, it was disappointing. We really should have gotten that done. We tried in the budget, didn't work there. We tried post-budget as well. The real sticking point was where the how the revenues that would be garnered from the legalization, how would we expend those revenues? And our house and the assembly, the majority, we wanted a good portion of it to go in investments in communities that had been most adversely impacted by the criminalization of marijuana, as well as to create entrepreneurial opportunities for those folks who had been most adversely impacted, people of color, to participate in this new industry. You know, it's a several billion dollar industry, illegal industry right now. We need to make it, bring it above and make it a legal industry, reap the benefits of it. What we were able to do is we decriminalized the possession of marijuana in small amounts, and also got rid of the in-view a piece of legislation which basically said it'd be a higher offense if you can actually see the marijuana versus it being in your pocket, which is part of the stop and frisk problem that we have here in Rochester as well as in New York City. So we decriminalize it so you can possess it, small amounts. We reduce the fine if we made it a violation versus misdemeanor so that people don't have to have that on their records. So we took a step forward, but not far enough. We really should have legalized.
You know, your colleague is making an interesting point. Mark is making a point that is similar to what we heard former Assembly Majority Leader and now Congressman Joe Morelli say about single-payer health care, which is that he didn't support it at the state level because he thinks it ought to be a federal issue. Mark is making the same point about marijuana and about climate action. Is there an argument there that whether it's marijuana or climate action, it shouldn't be a state issue? Harry Bronson.
Absolutely not. We can't wait for this federal government to do anything at this point. I mean, their gridlock is is rampant at the federal level. We have an administration that's not interested in dealing with the real issue of climate change. Our children can't wait for us to deal with this, and New York State needs to be a leader in it, and we have by the measure that we passed toward the end of session. Similarly with marijuana, it can't just be a federal issue because we have state laws that have criminalized it. We have state laws that have blocked people out of being a part of an industry that is very positive, and not only the marijuana, but the hemp industry and other things which we've advanced forward. And similarly to workers' rights, I don't think that we should wait for the federal government on workers' rights. We should be a leader. We are a leader when it comes to progressive ideals. And you can use a Republican line. The states are supposed to be the place where you experiment with laws and see how they work before you put them in at the federal level. So under even a Republican argument of states doing that, I think that New York State needs to be a leader in all these areas.
Well, Mark, when it comes to climate change, climate action, you have concerns. You say you're concerned about climate change, but you're concerned about the impact of an individual state action versus a federal action. Tell me why.
Right. Well, just exactly what I reiterated before. I mean, it would be nice, I worked in environmental health, and, I know that there is global climate change. You see the polar ice caps melting. You know what's going on, or at least I do, and I think most people agree with me. But the idea that New York State is going to be an environmental safe zone, or that New York State is going to be a workers' paradise, we see people leaving. We see good-paying jobs leaving. They're going to other states, and then when they leave other states, they're going to other countries, countries like China, Malaysia, Indonesia. They're going to India. And guess what? With the Paris Accords, where we were supposed to have the climate change, the summit, what happens? They exempt India and China, the two biggest polluters, they exempt them for 25, 30 years. I mean, we need to do something, and we need to do it now. I think that the president was wrong to pull out of that, but I don't think he was wrong when he said that the other countries ought to be at the same standards that we are. We can't, as I said before, be a workers' paradise, an environmental paradise, while all the other states around us and down south and to the west don't play by the same rules.
All right, but make sure we understand, if we are setting a different standard, which has now happened with climate action in this state, you're concerned about what are the consequences going to be if this happens this way, Mark?
Well, first of all, why would you want to move to New York State? If you're a manufacturing business and you can expand or increase productivity, why would you do it in New York? We're already seeing some of the ramifications of some of the laws that we pass in New York. It's business unfriendly. A manufacturing business is not coming here. You saw what happened with Amazon in New York City. We offered three times as much in tax abatements to Amazon as they did in Virginia. They went to Virginia for $1 billion in tax abatements. We offer $3 billion in New York City. They don't come here. We're looking like a state that's very business, anti-business, and pro-environment, but anti-business. Everybody should play at the same level. Taxes on the rich. Trump used to say, let's raise taxes on the rich. Bernie Sanders said it. But you can do it at the federal level, but as the governor said, you do it at the state level, you're just going to chase people out of the state. People with money are going to go to the Carolinas to work or Florida to retire. We got a problem. We've seen it now for decades. We're going to lose at least one congressional seat in 2022. We lost two in 2012.
Harry Bronson, climate action. You heard your colleague's concern. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's called Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act for a reason. Number one, it's New York State taking a leadership role when it comes to climate issues and environmental issues. And number two, it's helping to protect, in particular, our children who are going to face really dire situations if we don't address this now. Is it true that other countries have to address it, the rest of the country has to address it? Absolutely. I mean, we're not going to do this alone, but we can be a leader in it. And furthermore, as we are reducing emissions and those goals that are set, we're also requiring renewable and sustainable energies. Those are jobs. And we're at the forefront of creating an opportunity in this state for those industries to come here. We're investing in those industries. So that's actually creating jobs. It's not going to be eliminating jobs. And then lastly, the whole argument that That this state isn't business friendly. You know, I understand that to some degree. I'm a business owner. I fully appreciate that. But we can't have a race to the bottom. We have to have regulations that protect workers. We have to have regulations that create opportunities not only for businesses, but also will invest in workers. And then, you know, lastly, you know, we have the lowest manufacturer's tax in, you know, several decades. I think it's 40 or 50 years. And we have manufacturing growth in this state. We're not losing manufacturing the way we were. We have manufacturing growth. We've invested in apprenticeship programs through MACNE, which is a manufacturers association, which has apprenticeship programs across the state to fill many of the unfilled jobs. There's roughly 70,000 unfilled jobs in manufacturing today. So we're working to invest in manufacturing and invest in workers to work in those jobs.
But let's extend Mark's concern about states versus federal action. And he brought up taxation, which he's right. Governor Cuomo is concerned that if we pass, for an example, some kind of ultra-millionaires tax, perhaps similar to what Senator Elizabeth Warren is proposing on the campaign trail, which would be 2 cents on every dollar past $50 million that someone has. The concern that Governor Cuomo, others, Mark is expressing, is if you live in New York City, well, you're going to go live in New Jersey, you're going to live in Connecticut, you're going to find a way to change your address, or you're going to move entirely. Because you can. Whereas if it's on the federal level, you can't escape it unless you offshore it. They'll find a way to offshore it. But the bottom line is it's a lot harder to escape it. Do you agree with that? And did you support any form of an ultra-millionaire's tax here?
Yeah, we in the Assembly have put a ultra-millionaire's tax in our One House budget each year over the last several years. And I generally support that. I do think that there's more of a awareness by folks who are, millionaires and billionaires in this state of contributing more because it's beneficial of the whole community. And, you know, will there be people that leave? Absolutely. Those people are already finding loopholes to save their money. But the dollar, if you actually look at the raw dollar amount, and I can't quote it off the top of my head, but, you know, these are not large amounts of money when you compare it to their overall wealth or their overall revenues. And I think most multimillionaires and billionaires are looking at it and they choose to live where they want to live. They don't, you know, will they try some schemes to create? Yeah, there'll probably be some of that. But I don't think that should deter us from, you know, the social contract that I think we all enter into in supporting the whole.
You think it's immoral for someone to have more than $1 billion, Harry?
No.
Okay, Mark?
No, Howard Schultz has more than a billion, and he looks like he's running as a third-party candidate. So, and he's another guy that says, let's tax the rich.
That's next president Howard Schultz to you, Mark.
Yeah, next president. Well, we need an independent president, right?
But he's not polling well yet.
Well, he hasn't started his campaign, you know, and I don't drink Starbucks, but I listened to him, and he made sense on some fiscal and financial issues. The reality is that, the Green New Deal was proposed, never voted on in the House of Representatives. If they wanted to legalize marijuana, the Democrats control the House of Representatives. They could do that. They could pass single-payer health care. Maybe it's going nowhere in the Republican Senate, but they could pass it. And when the Green New Deal, Mitch McConnell brought it up in the Senate, they didn't get one vote. Not one Republican vote, not one Democrat vote. So maybe it's not as popular outside of New York as we think.
Where do you stand on health care at a state level? I assume that's under the same umbrella for you, Mark.
Exactly. I agree with Joe Morelli. You cannot be, if everybody's just going to come to New York State because health care is free, guess what? That's where you're going to go. When times get really bad, you're going to New York for free health care. And, you know, it's another thing. I believe that anybody who's the working poor should be taken care of. The working poor are the backbone of this country. They're doing the jobs that apparently nobody else wants to do, and we need to have done, whether it's farm work, food production. It has to be done. Let's make sure that people get a voucher to pay for their health insurance. And let's make sure that if they're making under $30,000, $35,000 a year, they're tax-free. So we're going to help them in one way by making their income, low income, tax-free, and we'll send them a voucher so they can have private health insurance as good as any member of Congress.
Assemblyman Bronson, remind our listeners what happened regarding health care in this session.
Yeah, it didn't get very far. We weren't sure what was going to happen, but it didn't hit the priority list, I guess is how I would put it. As you know, I'm a longtime supporter of single-payer health care at the state level. I do agree it would be better to do it at the federal level, but again, we can't wait for the federal government to do the right thing. And you know, my colleague referred to it as free health care. It's not free health care. You know, it is shifting so that residents in the state, instead of paying an inordinate amount of money on copays and on premiums and other costs associated with the current health system, which is a employer-funded system, we're shifting that into that they would be paying into a tax system along with the employers to pay for health care. And there's estimates that show that at the end of the day, they're going to be spending less amount of money on healthcare through that tax system than they are through the copays and the premiums and things of that nature. The other thing is, this would be a great win for, bless you, this would be a great win for our localities, because it would also shift off from their general budget system much of these expenses that they could save through being a part of an employer contribution to the system. Overall, you know, yes, it's better to do it at the federal level, but once again, we can't wait for the federal government to take action in these areas.
But right now, Democrats have total control in Albany, and if it wasn't a priority this year, should we expect that we're not going to see single payer at the state level anytime soon?
Well, there's been a lot of changes made to the bill. Assemblymember Gottfried is holding public hearings with the senator. And they have taken a lot of information in. They've made some changes, and I suspect there'll be additional changes made. So, you know, this is a big move, and, you know, I think it's a matter of time, and we have to continue to get it right.
Well, I want to know if the members of the Assembly in studio, Harry Bronson and Mark Johns, agree with this formulation as we talk about health care. I almost never hear political leaders say, okay, when it comes to healthcare, there's going to be a trade-off, and here's what the trade-off should be. You know, what we hear is, we're going to do single-payer, and it's actually going to cost less, and it's going to be better for everybody. When we know in Canada, it's a pretty successful system. We also know that it takes longer to get some elective surgery, not emergency care. Mm-hmm. But are there trade-offs that we should make? And is it a case where we should be ready for those trade-offs and say there's a moral decision here or there's a pragmatic decision? What are the trade-offs? What do you think is a little lesser in a single-payer system that we can live with, Assemblyman?
Well, first we should point out we're the only industrialized country that has an employer-funded healthcare system. We didn't do that because we felt like it was the great way to fund our healthcare. We did that at a time in our country when there was a shortage of employees for jobs that were available, and employers were fighting to get employees to come work for them. And they ingeniously, instead of increasing compensation, direct compensation, they could spread the cost of compensation by providing benefits. So that's how we got here. So there's no magic to this funding system. But the trade-off indeed is what you said, that everyone should have access to health care. I believe it's a human right. The UN believes it's a human right, and other entities believe it's a human right. And so everybody should have access. And it should be, and access isn't just that it's available, it has to be affordable as well. Single payer makes it affordable to everyone. But that means that the trade-offs would be, as you indicated, you're going to get emergency services, you're going to get preventative services, similar to what's under the Affordable Care Act. But when it comes to elective surgeries or things, you know, we can spread it out. But, you know, that already happens under the current system. So I'm not sure how much of a trade-off that is, but, you know, I think that trade-off is worth it.
No, it's interesting you bring that up. I have a neat condition called NEAT is the word for eosinophilic esophagitis, really neat. You know how long it takes me just to see a doctor for that? Months right now. Months. I mean, so we're not all snapping our fingers right now. Mark, do you see any trade-offs worth making for single payer?
Not at the state level. I mean, I agree with Congressman Morelli. It should be first of all, it doesn't have to be single payer at the national level. We can just make sure we cover all low-income people. If you're working, guess what? We're going to help you out. We should make work pay, you know, and it's not a bad idea to help the working poor. As I say, they're the backbone of the country. I'm on the government employees committee. We had a committee meeting down there in Albany where the the government unions, and it's also true of private sector unions, stood up and said, do not in any way pass the New York State single-payer plan. These were all the government unions. These were the building trades guys, all completely against it. The older people, people 65 and older, are on Medicare. They've paid in. They don't want a single-payer system. They say, hey, look, I've been in this for a long time. Now I'm 65 or older. I'm looking for something better. All of a sudden, I'm going to be paying into something else. There's a lot of people, if you break it down and take a look at it, they're not real happy with the single-payer system, really, in New York. And even at the national level, there's some problems.
All right. Those are the perspectives of members of the Assembly. Mark Johns, Harry Bronson. Yeah, go ahead, Mark.
One more thing.
Yeah, yeah.
The Affordable Care Act, ACA, it wasn't real popular. It's pretty popular now. You guys are a little younger. Harry, well, everybody's younger than me. But I remember when Hillary Clinton was trying to pass health care nationwide, and the older people in the audience would remember the Harry and Louise ads. Oh, they're going to take away your doctor. Remember those ads?
Of course.
Evan, you're older than I thought.
1994.
Well, exactly. And they all came out and they said, look, we are against what they thought was single-payer health care, socialized medicine. Who was supporting those Harry and Louise ads? Big pharmaceuticals, big pharma, big insurance companies. They were against it. How come in 2010, 2009, when they proposed Obamacare, ACA, none of those commercials came out? Big Pharma was totally on board with it. The big, the big insurance companies, totally on board. Why? Because they wrote the legislation.
Yeah, it's a good deal for them.
Exactly. It's a great deal for them. Their stocks tripled and quadrupled. They make money because everybody's going to be covered, and if you're low income, the government's going to pay for it. So the same big money interest that didn't like the one plan liked the Affordable Care Act that Obama proposed, and guess what? They got it through, and they wrote big portions of the bill.
You sound like a single-payer advocate at the national level.
I'm not a single-payer advocate. I am for everybody being covered. And if you have a private health care system where people are low income, let's send them a voucher for $6,000, $8,000, $10,000. Let's make sure that they have the same kind of coverage that the members of Congress have.
All right, let's get our only break of the hour, and let's come back to some of your feedback. We've got some emails to read for the members of the Assembly who are with us in studio, breaking down what just happened in Albany with the close of the legislative session. You can call the program toll-free, 844-295-TALK. It's 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections@WXXI.org. We're going to talk rent control. We're going to talk about a lot of different issues when we come back and get some of your feedback next. Coming up in our second hour, we welcome a woman who just completed a journey that took 6 months. She set out to run every street in the city of Rochester. Nearly 2,000 streets, more than 900 miles. And on May 31st, she finished that journey. We'll talk about what she learned, what she saw, what she heard, and the lessons from running every street in Rochester next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, alongside a couple of members of the New York State Assembly. Harry Bronson and Mark Johns are with us in studio. On Twitter, the Citywide Tenant Union of Rochester says, "Hey, Evan Dawson, want to personally thank Harry Bronson for the tremendous effort he put in during this legislative session toward housing. We know it was his advocacy that brought the Assembly hearing to Rochester so we could share our stories." That's from the Citywide Tenant Union of Rochester. Rent control was a big question. What was going to happen in Albany? Tell us what happened and how you feel about it.
Sure. The two biggest things that happened for upstate New York was to authorize localities throughout the entire state to opt into the Emergency Tenant Protection Act of 1974. And that would allow a municipality that has a vacancy rate of below 5% to opt in. And then under the past law, it would be the county of where that municipality is located to create a rent guideline board. Through my advocacy, made a change. So now it's the opting in a municipality, because I didn't want the city of Rochester to opt in, but the Monroe County to really set the board up. So that was a huge win for us. The second win relates to having a due process changes to eviction notices. So depending on how long someone has lived in a location, if it's a year or less, then there has to be a 30 days notice. If it's 2 years or less, it's 60 days or 90 days notice for 2 years or more. This gives people an opportunity that when a landlord is requiring them to leave, oftentimes of no fault of their own, they're going to get more time to actually make that transition. And in addition, we put in due process rights regarding, that if someone has failed to pay their rent, an eviction notice can't happen until 14 days after to give them some time to pay that rent. And then we had more protections in the judicial proceedings as well. So it's it was balancing the landlord's rights of property with a tenant's right, oftentimes living in a location for many years, and then there's a new owner or something and they're kicked out. We heard at the public hearing here in Rochester, which I was really glad that the speaker agreed to do an additional hearing up here in Rochester, so folks in our community could be heard. And at that hearing, I think the woman was 74 years old and had lived in a location for many years and was kicked out, evicted, with no real notice. And we just can't allow that to happen. I understand property rights and landlord rights, but we have to balance that with tenants' rights. We have here in Rochester, we have a higher percentage of people paying more than 30% of their income on rent than places in New York City. This is a serious problem in the city of Rochester, and some of the things that we did in the legislature will alleviate some of those problems.
Okay, Assemblyman Jones, how did you feel about the legislation?
I wasn't a big fan of aspects of it. The rent control really started back after World War II, 44, 45, 46. We had a lot of, a million guys coming back from the war in Europe and Asia. We had this got done fighting World War II. They were coming back. There was droves of people. There wasn't enough housing to go around. And to stop the landlords from gouging them with so many people coming back, they put in rent control laws. They've been in effect for 75 years. And the number one thing that people run on in New York City, and you've heard the expression, the rent is too damn high. So we've had 75 years of, somewhat of a failure. I mean, New York City is not a cheap place to live. And for the people that are lucky enough to be in rent control, I sit on the housing committee. The housing committee is rent control. It's the most important thing going on in New York City politically by far. I mean, there's a lot of popular things, term limits, you name it. But rent control is a big, big deal down in New York City because we backed ourselves into this corner where no one can afford the little bit of housing that's left. And when you have, an older person, maybe their husband or wife has died off, they're living in a 3-bedroom rent controlled apartment. They can be making up to $200,000 a year. And some poor black or brown family can't rent that at a rent controlled situation. And they're in a 3-bedroom apartment. There are problems with rent control, and bringing it up here, just be careful what you wish for.
Okay, you want to respond to that, Assemblyman Bronson?
Sure. I think what we did is a good step forward. There are folks who are spending way too much in rent. We realize that. But even those folks, when they're in a rental property for many years, have absolutely no protection. If a new developer buys the rent and wants to convert it into higher rent, or if for some reason their landlord just wants them out. We took the simple steps of saying the landlord has to give notice, and that notice varies, depends on the length of time in. We took steps to say that judges have more leeway if there is an undue hardship to, like the 74-year-old woman I just mentioned, to look at that and say, it's too much of a hardship on this tenant. Let's figure out a way to make it work, and also to require more notice. The 14 days I just mentioned for non-payment, that has to be wait. And then a warrant of eviction, the judge has to give a longer period of time before that eviction happens. That is going to solve the problems of people who are just being kicked out of their house. Another example here in Rochester, and I'm focused on Rochester. I'm not focused on New York City. I want to protect the residents of the city of Rochester. And here in Rochester, tenants would complain about mold in their houses, or the bathroom ceiling falling in, or not having heat, or not having hot water. And after those complaints, they're getting evicted. We now have a piece of legislation that says that a landlord cannot retaliate and evict a tenant for making a complaint regarding the substandard conditions of an apartment.
Let me get a phone call on this subject.
Evan,
go ahead, Mark.
Before, I don't want to cut anybody off.
No, go ahead.
Wouldn't it be better if we could turn a lot of the renters into homeowners? Now, I said this at the meeting. Steve Simbowitz was up here with the Housing Committee. I was at that meeting with Harry over at the county office building. Why not for low-income people? A lot of people, they make decent money, but they can't save anything. If you're low-income, where are you going? You're not going to save a lot of money. Let's give the low-income people a down payment and closing costs and turn them into homeowners. They're never going to be kicked out of their own home. They're going to have the pride of ownership. They're going to be in stable communities, stable neighborhoods, stable schools. It's a win-win-win situation.
If someone is in a low-income category and they're not making mortgage payments, what happens to them, Mark?
Well, the same thing would happen to anybody that's overdue on their mortgage. But what I'm saying is there was a lady down there say she's paying $1,300 a month. I said, could you afford $800, $900? Yeah, I could. Well, guess what? With a down payment and closing costs, she might only be paying $900 a month for a three-bedroom. Now, it's not going to be a big house, but the fact is it's going to be a place to live, raise a family, and have stability.
Okay, why isn't that better, Assemblyman Bronson?
Oh, I don't think it is necessarily one or the other. I support home ownership, and if we can find mechanisms to get low-wage earners into homes, that's fine. I'm all supportive, but I don't think the vision or the idea of having that should be the replacement of doing the corrective action that we took in this legislation.
John in Rochester on this subject. Go ahead, John. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. I had in my history, I've had to evict a number of people, and I'll tell you, it's very difficult to do. As far as timing goes, you got to fill out the paperwork just right, and the judges are very protective of the tenants. In my case, I've bent over backwards to try to give the tenants a lot of leeway to the point where, it got ridiculous. In fact, I'll give you an example. I tried to evict somebody, this is back in the late 80s, and I got a judgment for, I think, $1,000. I said, Judge, that tenant owes me $1,400, not $1,000. And the judge said to me, you can afford it. So the judges have a lot of leeway here, and it's very difficult. It's very difficult to evict people under the current legislation. So I think it's going to be a really bad vibe for the free enterprise system with this new legislation. The other thing I wanted to talk about was the Paris Climate Accord, and I think Mark brought that up, that China, some other, India, they have so many exemptions from this. In fact, the coal plants in China, they're still constructing them, and I think in India also. So I agree with Mark 100% that the Paris Climate Accord should be negated.
All right, John, thank you. You want to respond, Harry, just on the subject of rent control, John's story there.
Sure. Well, first of all, John, thank you for being a good landlord. Unfortunately, not all landlords are, and not all landlords give reasonable accommodations to their tenants. So what this legislation will do is require due process, require more notice, and a better working system and offering tenants rights as they're being evicted.
All right, a couple more issues before the hour is up. I have heard from a list of doctors who are very surprised at the votes of most of our delegation regarding vaccines. And here's the story as I understand it. New York State has joined a small but growing list of states in passing a ban on religious exemptions for vaccines. Assemblywoman Jamie Romeo, who couldn't join us today, voted for that ban on religious exemptions. I don't know that anybody else from the delegation, Republican or Democrat, joined her. Is that right? Oh, Mark, you did. You voted to pass the ban on religious exemptions. Okay. Tell us why you voted to pass that ban.
Well, I worked in public health for 33 years, so I'm not against vaccines. But we had literally probably 1,000 people either calling my office, coming in. I had a number of groups coming into the office here and in Albany. Some people just wandering in, and I talked to them. They're very passionate about the idea of vaccines. But the fact is, they wanted a religious, what it amounted to really, a First Amendment exemption. And I think what they really are concerned about is a medical exemption. And I understand that people have immune deficiencies, they're suffering from cancer and a number of different things, which doesn't allow them to get a vaccine. But if we have 98% of the people that are vaccinated, for the people that can't be vaccinated, you know, they'll be protected by the herd immunity.
Okay, so you are in favor and voted for the ban on religious exemptions for that reason?
Yes.
Okay, which did pass. Not with your support, Assemblyman Bronson. And boy, I've heard from doctors who said, I cannot believe Harry voted that way. Explain.
Yeah, I've heard from them on social media
sure
and other platforms as well. But let me put on the record, I strongly believe in science, and I am a huge supporter of vaccinations. I think that vaccinations are key to eliminating the spread of contagious illnesses and diseases, and certainly when it comes to measles. I support the measles, mumps, rubella vaccination, but it wasn't just about that. It was about whether or not you could show the removal of an existing constitutional religious right, removal of that, and the causation of the roughly 588 cases in New York City, 266 cases in Rockland, and a handful of other ones in counties throughout this state. Was there a connection between that exemption and the current outbreak? Numerous sources said there was not. The real connection is, unfortunately, a hysteria that's happening on social media and on the internet of misinformation regarding vaccinations. And I felt that instead of going after the religious exemption, a better approach to this would have been, let's invest in communications of and awareness and, you know, public service announcements and ways to get people to understand vaccinations. That being said, I had numerous families come into my office, families from the city of Rochester, families from the town of Chilai, families from the town of Henrietta, begging me not to support this bill. In total, although I know there's polling numbers that, you know, aren't consistent with what my constituency experience was, we had almost three times the number of people opposing the legislation than supporting it. At the end of the day, because of the lack of the connection and the causation of the current outbreaks, I just didn't feel that I could remove the religious exemption.
Are you going to keep listening to doctors on this one?
Oh, I agree with doctors from a standpoint of, you know, the need for vaccinations. Absolutely support it. I've done PSAs for vaccinations for, you know, other illnesses, and I will continue to promote vaccinations. And I think that we at the state level should be investing in a communications, education, and awareness program to do so.
I know Mark wants to jump in. One more point for Harry. Go ahead, Mark.
Look, I told the people, now the same people that came to my office went to Harry's, because I sent them to Harry's office, and I told them, I said, you got to go down and talk to the majority members. They're the ones that are going to bring it up. And remember, every bill that comes to the assembly floor passes. They haven't had a bill come up and be voted down in decades. So you know where it's going to get stifled, if at all, is in the health committee. The health committee had three Democrat members, at least, that were going to vote no and did vote no until they flipped right in the last 2 weeks that we were in session. Three of the no votes, three of the Democrat no's went yes. So the bill came out of the health committee, went to the floor. I think these people that were against vaccines thought it wasn't coming up. I thought it wasn't coming up. Three members flipped, voted from no to yes. The bill came to the floor. The same three members that voted yes in the health committee, when the bill came to the floor for a vote, they voted no. I mean, this is Albany at its best. You wonder why the expression, they don't tolerate corruption, they demand it. Everybody laughs at it. And why do they laugh? Because a lot of things that happen in Albany, you just wouldn't believe.
30 seconds, Harry. Why didn't you just tell people who come to your office, I hear your pain, but you're wrong on this one?
Because of the connection. There was not a scientific connection that religious exemption is what caused the current outbreak.
Okay.
If the science had shown that, it would have been a different thing.
Okay. And I know you wanted to briefly, we're in our last minute here. You, issues that haven't been on the media's radar: mental health accessibility, consulting contract. Tell us briefly about those.
Yeah, really. So we just passed a mental health providers bill. There's three of them, actually, because we have a shortage of mental health care providers in upstate New York, but throughout New York State, but in particular in our area. This would authorize reimbursement both through commercial carriers as well as Medicaid for mental health practitioners licensed under the state as well as licensed clinical social workers. So huge measure to help mental health parity in the state. And then the taxpayer consulting bill would require every time an agency is ready to let out a contract to consultants that they have to do an analysis to see if it would be less expensive to do it with in-house state employees.
And Mark Johns, you still want to see the SOL Act passed, don't you?
The SOL Act, among other things, people would like to see some legislation. Remember, 90% of it doesn't come up. Let's just start bringing some bills to the floor.
I know you've been advocating for that for a long time, and I always want to make sure you've got the opportunity to tell people about that because I know it's part of your passion.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'd just like to point out that Mark Johns did get a bill passed on the assembly floor this year, so he doesn't really need the SOL Act.
Evan, it was a land swap bill. It wasn't term limits, okay?
Both members of the assembly, thank you for being here. Harry Bronson, Mark Johns, always good to see you both. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. More connections coming up.